You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com. The comments and opinions of the guests on Dishin' and Swishin' are not necessarily the views and opinions of the host of the show or the contributors and management of hoopfeed.com. The Dishin' and Swishin' podcast is meant for entertainment purposes only, and the inclusion on the podcast of any individual, entity, or institution is not to be considered an endorsement of any kind.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast, one of the most listened to and one of my favorite to record each and every year. It is the NCAA Tournament Preview Show, and I have together today one of the best panels for a roundtable that I think that we have ever had. We've got, from the AP, Doug Feinberg. Doug, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, David. Always a pleasure.
From ESPN and ESPNW, Michelle Vopel. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, David.
And I have got two of the hardest working women in the business that have been so busy all season, they haven't been able to join us, and I'm pleased to welcome them back to the podcast. First, LaChyna Robinson, welcome back.
Hey, David. Thank you so much for having me. Good to be back.
My pleasure. And BVL, Brenda Van Langen, welcome, Brenda. Good to have you back.
Thanks so much. Looking forward to it.
Well, I'll tell you, between you two and Debbie Antonelli, man, congratulations on all the hard work, and thank you for all the hard work that you guys did on the road for this year, covering games and doing studio and stuff. You were phenomenal.
Well, thank you, David. It's an honor to cover this game. It's an honor for us.
Doug, we might as well start with you, and, you know, I need you to explain to me how your preseason pick of Columbia to the Final Four didn't work out.
Well, the men won their first postseason game in 46 years last night, and the CPI beating Valpo at Valpo, so I'll take small victories when I can have them.
Yes, congratulations. I saw that, so I had to mention it, that Columbia won a postseason game, and congratulations, Doug. So. But on to the real stuff and on to the tournament. Let's start. We're talking about we have the four number one seeds, Notre Dame, Connecticut, Tennessee, and South Carolina. You know, there has been a lot of discussion about whether or not Tennessee and especially South Carolina deserve those number one seeds. And, Michelle, you were one of the ones on ESPN that said that the biggest surprise to you was that Stanford was not chosen as a number one there.
Yeah, and I just, I thought based on body of work and strength of schedule, I thought Stanford would have had the edge over South Carolina in those things. But, I don't think it was like a huge travesty that Stanford wasn't a number one. I was just surprised by it. And it doesn't seem like Tara Vanderveer is really upset by it. She's was surprised, but she's not ranting and raving about it.
Looking at their bracket overall, and we might as well start out there with that region. Brenda, does it really make a difference if they were a number one or a number two?
It doesn't really seem like it. I mean, ultimately, they're hosting their region, and so, it could end up being a South Carolina-Stanford regional final anyway, and as you look at the paths for both of them, I think they're equally tough. So I'm not sure that it really made a difference in that region. And, if it does turn out that South Carolina is able to stay true to their seed and advance all the way to that final, wouldn't that be something to look forward to? Just, Stanford and all of their history and everything that, Stanford represents in women's basketball, and then Dawn Staley being able to advance and, playing for Tara Vanderveer on the Olympic teams and just what she's been able to do at South Carolina. There are just so many potential storylines if we happen to get to that point. But, that's just one of the many stories in this tournament this year.
LaChyna, you've been on Twitter. You've talked a lot about South Carolina, and in particular Tiffany Mitchell, and what a great player she has become so quickly. Were you surprised that South Carolina was a number one?
I was not. In fact, I think when we were asked to participate in an analyst eye test, Despite the results, which it seems like I was in the minority, I had South Carolina in my top four. I'm just really impressed with their balance. You know, I think there is an unselfishness with their team that I've seen in some of the great teams that have played, obviously, like the Connecticuts, the Notre Dames, and the Tennessees. They've really bought into what Don Staley is selling in terms of inside-out game. They have an energy when they play, their ability to get to the free throw line. I think Elisa Welch is definitely underrated. I mean, she's one of the best players. To me, she's one of the top 10 in the country. But also, as you mentioned, Tiffany Mitchell, I think she's very special. Only a sophomore, but with a ton of potential. I just think that Don's done a fantastic job as a point guard of looking ahead for her program last year into what they had coming in with the post play and incorporating it into an already talented backcourt that I think has a good chance to make it to the Final Four.
So we have these various things that I've picked up in doing research and reading different things that I always get a kick out of some of these that they come on. The first thing I can tell you, if you're filling out your brackets, people, you can eliminate the 14, 15, and 16 seeds because there's been one victory in the history of the NCAA tournament from any of those three spots. So, you know, you can cross those three out. I'm sorry, in this region, for Cal State Northridge and Wichita State and for South Dakota, but they're not going to go very far in this tournament. Now, that said, looking in that bracket, Middle Tennessee State and Oregon State jumps out to as me as a possible really good game, and Florida Dayton looks like a potential upset. I'm not entirely sold on Dayton. But, you know, what do you see when you look at the Stanford Regional for potential pitfalls for some of the higher seeds?
Yes, I mean, I think you hit it nail on the head. I think that the best game in the region is probably that 8-9 game, as you would expect, with Middle Tennessee and Ebony Rowe is a heck of a story, and she's had a great career so far against Oregon State, who had that great run through the Pac-12 tournament. So that's probably the best game. I don't think they can get much past the first round. Or the second round they get into, but I mean, I went on a limb, so to speak, and I thought North Carolina, that is going to come out of that region. I mean, that's the thing about freshmen. They can be incredible or they can be freshmen. And I think we've seen both sets of that in North Carolina this season with wins they've had and losses they've had. And that's just something about them. I mean, they beat South Carolina, I think, in Myrtle Beach in December, and I think they're better. I mean, I think Michelle wrote about how DeShields is fearless. She doesn't care where she plays, whether it was at Duke or anywhere else. I mean, she can carry that team, and it's going to be, I think, a chance for them to first have to play South Carolina, and who knows what happens there. And then Stanford, if they make it to the regional final, I mean, that would be something. North Carolina against Stanford, sort of the old guard of the Chinay Gumake versus the young gunslinger. So I think North Carolina comes out of there. Call it a whim, and I could be making a great prediction, or I could be an idiot when it's all said and done. But I think North Carolina has the best chance to sort of be that not one or two seed to get through that region.
Well, Doug's right, Michelle. You did write about Diamond DeShields, who is fearless is an outstanding word for her. Sometimes it just takes that one player playing really well, especially now. That's happened more on the men's side than on the women's side, but occasionally, you know, you get that one player that can just carry you far. Shields is one of those players.
And she's also really smart, and I mean that really smart. She really understands the moment. She's very, very good at knowing the personnel around her, what kind of game everybody's having. For as young as she is, she's the most plugged-in kid on that team, in terms of she knows who's feeling up, who's feeling down. She knows her opponents very well, much better than the average freshman does. So those are all things, just what Doug said, is those are things that can make Carolina scary, is that she's such a smart player. And she's also, you guys have seen her, she's athletically phenomenal. One thing I will say about Stanford being a two seed that I think actually could work in their favor is they may not have to play North Carolina. You guys probably remember a couple of years ago, 2011, Stanford really got a scare from Carolina in the Sweet 16. Now, that was a different group of kids, but it was the same type of, you know, Carolina players. And that was a team that had both Agumake sisters, and that game really went to the last minute. So they might be better served, avoiding if seeds hold. They might be better served avoiding North Carolina and playing Penn State, which doesn't come into the tournament on a real high after really laying a stink bomb in the Big Ten tournament.
Excellent point. And, you know, but similar to that, then let's look at it the other way. And Brenda, you have seen a lot of the Big 12 action all year, too. Iowa State is where Stanford will end up playing. Does Iowa State have a chance to pull an upset in Ames, Iowa?
You know, it's a real interesting possibility in that Hilton Coliseum is one of the greatest venues in the country for women's basketball. And there's no doubt in my mind that if Iowa State and Stanford meet in the second round, it's going to be completely sold out, and that place will go absolutely bonkers. And Iowa State's the kind of team that if they hit three-pointers, they are a very high-level team. If they don't shoot well, they can be very average. And, you know, you never know. We, in the Big 12, you hear it referred to as Hilton Magic, but you never know what can happen there as far as their three-point shooting ability. You know, and if you look back at history, Iowa State and Stanford met a few years ago when Jane Appel just tore them up for, I believe, over 40 points in that game. And I'm sure there's a lot of memories of that as well, and now facing Chinne Ogwumike and how will Bill Finley decide to defend, et cetera. I think there's a possibility that Iowa State could shake up the whole apple cart here. I think, you know, ultimately Stanford will prevail, but it might be one of the best atmospheres in the early rounds of the tournament.
Now, let's stay on the same side of the bracket then and head up to Lincoln, where Connecticut is number one, Duke number two. Everybody seems to be commenting that this is the easiest of the regionals. With China, my question is, you're the number one seed. Why shouldn't you have the easiest of the regional?
Oh, I think you should, because it was obvious that they were the overall number one. I mean, I think that's the way it should go, and I believe that's the way it's designed.
So Connecticut is... I guess the first question is there anybody, I'll throw this out to you, Doug, is there anybody in this region that should scare them?
Well, I would say the toughest game UConn could have potentially, assuming everything holds, is in the regional semis if they play Nebraska at home. And I'll defer to Brenda and Michelle, who've been, I'm sure, out there many times and seen that place rocking. And I don't think Nebraska has the talent to beat UConn, but at least they could make it somewhat interesting if they have that huge crowd and Hooper has a great game, and you never know. But, I mean, UConn is the class of the field this year with Notre Dame a little bit behind them, I think. And you're right, they have a somewhat easy path. I mean, Duke is number two. Duke healthy lost by 20 at home to UConn. Duke without Chelsea Gray and Alexis Jones, I think it would be a lot bigger gap if they do meet in the regional final.
Michelle, you know, if it were volleyball, I'd take Nebraska in a walk over Connecticut. But considering there's going to be hoops on this court, is there a puncher's chance with Hooper and Thurio playing the way that they can?
All they have to do is replicate, you know, what Louisville did to Baylor. So, you know, they have to hit about 16 or 17 three-pointers and play just incredible lockdown defense that gets Stephanie Dolson and Brianna Stewart really, really frustrated. So that's it. That shouldn't be too hard to do. But all sarcasm aside, hey, I saw Nebraska hit 17 three-pointers. It was against Penn State's pretty lackadaisical defense, and it's hard to see UConn playing that way. But Doug is right in that there is, and that's a brand new arena, but there's already some magic, I think, in that arena. It's a beautiful place. It's right downtown. And Brenda, the proud Nebraskan, knows that it UConn, Nebraska, I think there'll be people hanging off the rafters for that game. I think even though that it seems like, I believe, like, every men's team, Division I men's team in Nebraska is in the tournament, and there's so much excitement with men's hoops in the tournament. I think that place will be sold out. And if nothing else, you know, that energy. T. Laudermill plays well. Haley Sample is a great defender. Rachel Terrio is a really, really good point guard. You still come back to who guards Breanna Stewart, which is a, always the big question. But it could be. It could be at least a game where UConn has to sweat a little bit if they meet.
You know, and I'll just chime in because, yes, the native Nebraskan and former Nebraska coach that I am, I can bring that that slant to it. But, you know, just knowing and feeling the pulse of the people in Lincoln, the whole state, I know they are very excited about this possibility. But the pressure is on Nebraska to even advance to the regional semifinal, you know, to go out to L.A. and play Fresno State, a team that they should beat, but then potentially to beat North Carolina State in the second round. I think they're probably feeling a lot of pressure to get through those rounds to even get home for that opportunity. But the new Pinnacle Bank Arena, as you mentioned, Michelle, is you know, I've been to a lot of arenas, and it is the best college basketball venue that I've been to as far as amenities and sight lines and just really the pageantry and beauty of the facility. And they've created a little magic there this year so far. So it would be exciting. I can't see any way that, you know, beyond that, if Nebraska gets a chance to play UConn, that, you know, that they would have an opportunity to be within striking distance. I think UConn can roll through that region. And, you know, even on the other side, I'm sure we'll get to talk about the other side of the bracket too, you know, it could be Texas A&M there, which Texas A&M got an early out last year in the NCAA tournament from Nebraska at home. Not that they're going to get an opportunity to play against them probably, but I could see A&M coming up. And then, you know, I'd be interested in everybody's thoughts on, I know Duke played well in the ACC tournament, but even, you know, the possibility of a team like Oklahoma, who is one of those teams that, you know, some questioned whether or not they would make it in with their tough schedule and, you know, some of the good wins they had, they were able to get themselves into it. I could see a team like Oklahoma with the scorers that they have getting on a roll and having an opportunity to upset Duke possibly, especially since they played each other earlier this year. And Duke came into Norman and just rolled them with their five healthy players. That's one of the games I have circled, the potential Oklahoma-Duke in the second round in that region.
Excellent points, all of them. You actually anticipated the question was going to be, the first one I was going to ask was, can North Carolina State knock off Nebraska before it even gets there? You know, they had a phenomenal year until they lost their guards. But, you know, there's still going to be a tough out. There's no question about that. Now, you mentioned A&M, and that's somebody that I really wanted to talk about because, you know, it just seems that every year Gary Blair manages to get in there without a whole lot of name players and just, you know, take care of business. You know, Regina, what is it about Texas A&M that just every year Gary Blair manages to get them in there and get it and wreak havoc?
Well, I think it's their commitment to the defensive end of the floor. I mean, he hasn't wavered, even though with freedom of movement, I think we've seen some changes to how teams are defending. But it's difficult to play under that kind of duress for an entire game, the way that he can rotate players in and out. He's now got, you know, some experienced size on the interior, and then Walker and Williams, there's something really special in March about players that can create their own shot. They don't need a screen. They can just rise and fire in a mid-range game. There's nothing you can do about that, you know, when you have players that can score one-on-one. So just his ability to defend, I mean, the chances of him running into a team like Duke that is short in the backcourt where Texas A&M can pressure you, you know, if they're both to advance, they can pressure you from everyone on the court. That's scary. So I think just, you know, Gary Blair is a class act. He's been there. He understands how to win this time of the year. But I think the one-on-one plays of Walker and Williams and then their defensive pressure makes them particularly scary in the position that they're in the bracket.
Well,
Doug, I want to ask you, one of the teams that I think could be a big surprise is, you know, everybody talks about Kelly Graves and the great teams that he puts together in Gonzaga, but I got a feeling Kenny Brooks' team may take them out in the first round. James Madison is really good.
Yeah, they were a little overshadowed the last couple of years by that other team in the CAA led by Atlanta Deladon in Delaware. I mean, they were good. They just were overshadowed, I think. And this year, they had a great season, and they came up and basically manhandled St. John's and St. John's tournament. They have, a pretty balanced team, and they had a sophomore win the tournament MVP honors of the CAA, and they have Kirby Burkholder, their senior, who's pretty good. I think it's going to be an interesting game. I mean, he's not on the call, but, I mean, Graham Hayes would probably love to be at that game, the sort of the East versus West mid-major battle of James Madison versus Gonzaga. And with all of Kelly Graves' success over the last couple of years, I think this is the first time they've actually left the West Coast for the first couple of rounds in, like, 5 or 6 years. So they have to actually have to travel and not have that home court advantage they've had, which they've really done a great job out in Spokane and in Seattle building the last 2 years when they did play at home. That it's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't know the last time Gonzaga had a great win on the road, like outside of the Western region. That could be interesting. I mean, that's going to be probably the best game in that bracket, the 6-11 game. It's going to be interesting. I mean, you're right, James Madison has a really good chance to win that game and probably face A&M in the second round.
You know, it's funny. As soon as the bracket came out, David and Doug, I immediately said, look, there's the Graham Hayes honorary game right there. You know, that is just a game that I thought Graham has got to go there and I can go to Iowa. And I think that's what we're going to do. I'm pretty sure that's actually where he is headed. He's going to do the double between Baylor and Texas A&M. So I think he'll get to see that game, which is all the work Graham does in publicizing and bringing a lot more depth to the mid-major coverage. I know he's going to enjoy that.
Absolutely, and I have to say, he did pick on ESPNW that James Madison is a team better than a seed and also a possible Cinderella, but he also did say that A&M was the team that was worse than a seed. So it'll be interesting to see for him to see both of those teams. I just want to get back one last thing on this bracket before we move on. You know, let's talk about Duke for 1 second. We'll talk about Connecticut later. You know, Duke is such a, you know, an enigma as a program, period, in the fact that they can't seem to get over the hump. But this is, you know, borderline on basketball tragic to have to lose both of their point guards. You know, you got to feel for Tricia Liston and Haley Peters, and, of course, especially for Chelsea Gray. You know, Michelle, do they have any chance of really making a run? I mean, I have them getting taken out, if not by Oklahoma, like Brenda mentioned, then by A&M.
I guess I also don't want to rule out DePaul, with Doug Bruno.
Uh-huh.
You know, I just... The thing is, I saw Duke at the ACC tournament, and Lachina did too, and they really did play a very good half against Notre Dame, and you know they made it to the championship game. They beat Carolina, which was a big deal after taking their lumps from the freshmen in the two regular season games, but I don't think they match up well with A&M. And there just couldn't be a bigger nightmare for them than Connecticut in their bracket. They cannot beat Connecticut. I'm convinced there's no way possible. I mean, other than alien abduction, it's not going to happen. So when they saw that bracket, there was a friend of mine was at the watch party and said there was just this sort of deflation. They wanted to sort of be anywhere, even Notre Dame again, which wasn't going to happen. But they wanted to be anywhere but in UConn's quarter of the draw, and there they were.
You know, I have to admit, I mean, I see Connecticut versus A&M and Duke a whole lot of times. It seems to just keep happening in different places. But, you know, the good teams are always at the top of the bracket, and there's only so many of them, right? So that has to be that way sometimes. So.
And let's put it this way. I mean, Duke's lost to everybody in the Elite Eight the last year. It hasn't just been, I mean, they lost to Stanford in the Elite Eight. They've lost to Notre Dame in the Elite Eight. They've lost to Connecticut in the Elite Eight. So it's not just like that's the only obstacle. They've had an Elite Eight obstacle for the last 4 years and four years. And so I think Baylor's the other team they've lost to in the Elite Eight. So they haven't been able to get over that hump regardless of who the good team was that they've been facing.
Yeah, you know, excellent point. And we might as well on that note move over to the Notre Dame regional, because Kentucky is one team that finally is happy to not see UConn in their region. That's a team that has faced them each of the last 2 years. And they come in and they get Notre Dame instead in their regional. But this may be, you know, I think this may be the toll with regional, with Baylor in there and Cal, you know, and Purdue. Purdue, I think, may not be the best four seed, but Baylor certainly is going to be one team that is difficult for Notre Dame to get through. Brenda, you look at Baylor, you look at what they did this year. It's a pretty amazing story.
It really is. I mean, when the season started, there were so many question marks after not only graduating Brittany Griner, but every other starter besides Odyssey Sims, and then having to fill in with a bunch of absolutely unknowns. Mackenzie Robertson was only a role player her entire career. Sunny Ibuki never saw the court because she played behind Brittany Griner. And then, you know, you had Nia Johnson, who got a little bit of time last year. And then they lost Alexis Prince, who was going to be their second leading scorer, and she was out for the year with the injury. So you had to rely on a freshman stepping in. And so there were so many question marks at the beginning of the year. And so the fact that Baylor was able to, you know, once again win a Big 12 regular season championship, they shared it with West Virginia, of course, but then winning the Big 12 title, you know, it's just, it's really, it was pretty amazing. And, you know, a lot of credit to all those young players that stepped up, where they rode on Odyssey Sims' shoulders for the first part of the year, and then they learned all how to play their roles around them. And I think the most successful teams are the ones where every player on a team understands their role, and they accept it, and they are embraced for it, so that not everybody can score 30 points a game, but everybody has an important role. And I think that's why Baylor's been so successful. Sunny Ibuki, the post player, has become a very solid post defender and rebounder, and she plays her role. And Mackenzie Robertson is one of the smartest defenders that you're going to find, as far as being that secondary help defender, being in the right position all the time. And the year that Nina Davis has had has been phenomenal at only 5'11", doing all the things that she's done, scoring and rebounding-wise. So all those pieces and parts around Odyssey Sims have been pretty impressive. And, you know, the opportunity for some games for Baylor along the way here, you know, Cal, a team that made it to the Final Four last year that hasn't performed at that kind of level this year, but having them on their home court. And then, you know, the possibility of Kentucky, that four overtime game that we saw earlier this year, having a rematch there, and then potentially, you know, a Notre Dame matchup. So just all on the way, I'm really curious to hear what everybody else here thinks about this region, but there are some very interesting matchup possibilities.
You know, I look at Nina Davis, and I just like I see Jules Lyons and say, you know, it's too bad that Brianna Stewart has to be in the same year as these two is. For individual honors, you know, it's too bad the Diamond DeShields and Davis have to be in the same year, because Davis is phenomenal.
She really is, and you know, I mean, she's probably going to be the difference, I would think, in the growth she's had this year if Baylor and Kentucky play again in the regional semis. I mean, Odyssey Sims carried them for the first, what, two overtimes, three overtimes, whenever she fouled out, and that thriller down in Dallas, and I think Davis has really stepped her game up and, as Brenda said, sort of found her role a little bit better. And that's going to be a heck of a game. I mean, that might be one of the top games in the tournament before the potential championship game that must be a must-watch, I would think, in South Bend's court.
You know, as long as we got you here, you know, I was kidding you about Columbia, but how about Fordham? Can they knock down?
You know, I think they might be a surprise. How about the Atlantic 10 getting three teams in the tournament? I mean, that's more than the American and more than the Big East. I mean, you combine the old ones, it'd be more. But that Atlantic 10 conference is pretty strong with Fordham, Dayton, and St. Joe's. So I think Fordham's got a chance. I think they match up pretty well. They play pretty good defense. Something's been off with Cal this year. I mean, maybe it's the Final Four hangover from last year of the expectations after making your first Final Four. They just haven't played as well as they should have with what they had coming back. So you don't know if they're upset with that 7th seed, and they haven't really talked too much about it. I think Fordham kind of goes into that. I mean, think about it. They were 0-29 like 6 years ago. They didn't win a game, and now they're in the NCAA tournament, which is phenomenal. And I think there's a good chance. I mean, 7-10 games, I think it's a matchup. I think Stephanie Gately was kind of happy when that came up on the screen that they were a 10 seed, and they have a team they think they could match up well and beat. So that'd be great. That'd be great for the Rams to get a win in the NCAA tournament and then probably get run over by Odyssey Sims and the rest of the Baylor Lady Bears.
You know, one of the things about Fordham, though, that you know, I give them a lot of credit for coming back and winning the conference championship game, because if people recall in that semifinal, that was the becoming infamous St. Bonaventure game, where the Bonnies should have passed on the game after the tragic passing of their SID, and the game was just a travesty in terms of score. But, that's tough to then gear it back up to get ready for a championship game, and they did, and they took care of business, and they deserved their spot in the tournament. Now, the tournament, you know Cal pretty well. And, the one thing that Doug mentioned was their inconsistency this year. How much of that is tied to Jennifer Brandon?
Well, I think a lot of it is. You know, she was an All-American last year, and, the way their system is built, they love the transition game. And, I mean, how many times did we see Brittany Boyd connect to Jennifer Brandon in the open court last year for easy scores? And that's really been the biggest thing is they haven't had enough. They don't have great outside shooting. They've got a lot of players playing new roles, whether it's Jim Rigby or Michaela Lyles. I mean, these are players that were all pieces of last year's run, but not asked to do the kind of things that they've been asked to do this year. So I think there's been growth with that cast, but at the same time, Jennifer Brandon not being in the mix all year from a chemistry standpoint. You know, she had off-season surgery to insert rods in her legs before the season started, so there was already some question marks. I just think, you know, you take an All-American in and out of the mix like that, and it's tough. I mean, but at the same time, I think we've seen some outstanding play from Rashawn DeGray this year. To me, she's one of the most improved players in the country. So that's a plus. And she's even taking on more than she has. I just think Cal has to be more versatile in their offense, and I don't know if they have that on this year's team enough to make a deep run, and especially when it comes to hitting the outside shot and getting enough transition scoring.
Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing. In the other game in that bracket, there is going to be some serious three-pointers flying when Syracuse plays Kentucky. I'm not sure either one of these two teams knows how to get the ball inside the paint other than on an offensive rebound. All right. Michelle, you saw the ACC tournament. Syracuse has struck me. I mean, I love Brittany Sykes, but they seem like they've gotten away from getting her the ball frequently this year.
Yeah, I feel like, and LaChina was also at the ACC, and I'd be interested to hear her thoughts on Syracuse. I almost kind of thought Syracuse was they regressed in some games this year. There were games I thought they played better and played more to what their strengths are. And part of that, obviously, they had to come into a new league, just like Notre Dame did, and Pittsburgh did. So I think there were certainly some adjustments they had to make. But yeah, it is going to be interesting, if those two play each other. I mean, there's Chattanooga. I'd be interested if Jim Foster, can change some of his luck in the NCAA tournament with a different team, since Ohio State, he tended to struggle, a lot in the tournament. But, Syracuse and Kentucky could be an interesting matchup. Kentucky is a team that I thought, boy, about a month ago, I was really wondering about them. And then I feel like they put a lot of the parts together and really played very well and obviously then made the SEC title game. And I think probably they're kicking themselves for not winning that SEC title game. No offense to Tennessee because they played well. So, you know, Kentucky could be a team, I think, that, you know, could, if it is that Kentucky-Baylor matchup, that could be very, very interesting in the semifinal there.
Which I know, what are your thoughts on Syracuse?
I actually did not see them in the tournament. I did not see them play in the ACC tournament, but I just think overall it's tough because if you look at their style of play, and I talked to Quinn Hildeman about this earlier this season, you know, they play a lot of zone. And this year with the addition of the 10-second backcourt, teams are getting the ball up faster. And they used to be able to stall a little bit in the backcourt so they didn't have to play zone as long. And as you guys know, the longer you play against the zone, the more passes there are, the easier it is to find the openings. So I think that was one change for them, in addition to the freedom of movement and not being able to press as much. That's affected them this year, in addition to the loss of, I mean, some tremendous players from last year's senior class. But I think we just kind of forget that they're young. You know, I mean, Breonna Butler and Brittany Sykes are only sophomores, and as talented as they are, McDonald's All-Americans, I think with young players who expected to carry as much as there are, there's a lot of inconsistency that takes place.
Now, Brenda, as the resident Big 12 person, we'll include Michelle in there too, but I like to refer to Michelle as the national Big 12. Oklahoma State, Tiffany Bias, the rest of the Cowgirls, got a fairly tough matchup against Purdue Blooming, assuming that they can take care of Florida Gulf Coast. Tell me why Oklahoma State is going to win that game.
I'm not sure that they are. You know, Oklahoma State has been a team that has underachieved a little bit this year, in my opinion. And it kind of is one of those situations where I'm just really not sure why. Because they have a lot of the parts and pieces. Tiffany Bias is as good a point guard as you're going to see in the country. And she distributes well, she can hit the three, she can do so many good things to lead that team. But they've got some confidence issues with their scorers, with Liz Donahoe and with Brittany Martin. And they just, when they have not played well this year, it's been a problem putting points on the board. And they always had, you know, kind of built their reputation on defense in the past, and their defense hasn't been as strong either. So, you know, if they get out of that first round and if they meet Purdue, you know, Purdue's a team with some holes too, but they have performed admirably without KK Hauser when she went down with the injury. And, you know, the work that Courtney Moses does and leadership of that team, I think, has been impressive. And, you know, they're a team, Purdue, that can put a lot of points on the board. And I'm just not sure Oklahoma State can score with them if Purdue is shooting. And Purdue got the inside game going through Big Ten play, and they were a stronger team. You know, when K.K. Hauser went out, there were a lot of questions what they would be able to do. But I think it was the inside play that really bolstered their effort and helped them finish the Big Ten season better than they started it. So I would think that it would be Purdue. But, you know, as you look at Notre Dame's path, you know, you wonder if Vandy might give them a tougher game in some ways than Purdue or Oklahoma State. I'm not sure, but, you know, Vandy up and down, but playing in the SEC, so battle-tested, you know, I think Notre Dame can go through that side of the bracket fairly easily, but of those, you know, would Vandy potentially give them the toughest matchup along the way?
I agree with you on that because I'm one of those people that believes in the leadership of senior guards. And, you know, there's two phenomenal seniors in that Vanderbilt backcourt in Lister and Fogey that are right there in terms of one of the better college backcourts there are. In fact, if you look at this region, one thing that it talks about having is the guard play is very, very strong between, you know, Lloyd and all three Notre Dame guards, if you want to throw McBride in there. You know, the two from Vanderbilt, you know, Bias you mentioned, Moses you mentioned, and, you know, then we get into all the others and top it off with Odyssey Sims. So it is a good collection of guards in that region, and I think that that's going to make for a fun region to watch. But it does make for a difficult region, I think. So,
David, you know, one thing that's interesting, and this is very rare, where I would say one game really seemed to heavily impact a team, and Brenda was at this game, when Oklahoma State had a great chance to beat Baylor, and it would have been the first time in Tiffany Bias's career. And it was this maddening last, like, what was it, like 7 seconds or something, where Baylor got three chances to tie the score, and Mackenzie Robertson hit a three to send it to overtime. I felt like that really, Brenda and I have talked about what is wrong with Oklahoma State. They should be better. They should be more consistent. I really felt like that game was just a soul crusher for Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. They were at home. It was finally going to be their chance to beat their nemesis, you know, and Tiffany Bias's chance to finally say, I beat Odyssey Sims once, and it got away from them. And I do think that has had a hangover. As strange as that may sound, because it's only one game, I do think it impacted them.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it was just such a blow to the gut. They were so close, and they even had a chance to win it on a Tiffany Bias layup at the end of the game and missed.
Yeah.
So not only did they give up the three-pointer, they missed the layup, and then they had the ball to win it in overtime, and then they couldn't score, and Sims went to the other end and won it. So, I mean, they had it. So I think that impacted their season a lot.
You see, now that's why we bring the best together, because that was an outstanding point. So I agree. I think that you're right. That makes a lot of sense when you add it all up together, because that was an amazing game. And, you know, even just seeing the reaction post game, you know, I saw that one on television. You could see that OSU was just devastated by the way that it played out. So, you know, it is interesting to see what happens, and we'll see what happens with them as they go into the tournament.
David, before you move on in this region, sorry, Splatina, before you move on, I just wanted to add one point about Kentucky. I think they're really dangerous, and the reason why they are dangerous is also the reason why they're frustrating, is because they're so unpredictable. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that when you have guards that can score in one-on-one situations where you don't have to run a play and they can hit contested jumpers, that makes you a scary team in March. We know they have Jennifer O'Neill, but I also think the way that their freshmen are playing, Lene Harper, Michaela Epps, and let's just think about where those two fall in line of the guard rotation. They're way down the bench and came up big in the SEC tournament. So from the standpoint that Matthew Mitchell, I think more than many teams, has the options in the NCAA tournament to say, okay, this is not working, let's try her. This is not working, let's try her. She's not working, let's try that. Like, they really, if they have a couple players get hot, I mean, they could even give Notre Dame some trouble. And, yes, I am going on record to say that. And I just think that it depends on how well they're playing defensively, which they're playing more zone now. We never thought we would really see that from the 40 minutes of dread, but they have incorporated a zone, which is the reason why they're on an uptick. I mean, they ended their season beating Tennessee at Tennessee for the first time in forever. So I just wanted to make that point that I think Kentucky is definitely a sleeper, but I don't think any of us would be surprised.
I think the biggest thing with Kentucky, in my opinion, is and the switch to zone helps, is they've got to keep Stallworth on the court, and they've got to keep her head in the game. It just seems, I had asked Coach Mitchell about this when he was on earlier this year, it seems that when a big game happens, she seems to get overexcited and gets herself in immediate foul trouble.
Okay.
And she is such an important part on their team that, you know, there's nobody. Samari Walker is a nice piece, but they need Stallworth inside to be a presence.
Yeah,
and
I totally.
She's got to stay in.
Yeah, she got excited in the SEC tournament. I mean, I did their game against Florida, and it was like she was so ready to be out there and to do something great. I mean, she was just foul prone right away. The thing about Denisha Stallworth at this point, though, that I think makes Kentucky even better than they were earlier the season when they beat, you know, the Baylors and, you know, all of that, is that she, to me, is better after her injury at this point during this stint than she was earlier in the season. She had, you know, five or six games when she first came back from the knee scope where she was just not very good. And she said the first time she had ever been injured, and mentally it was messing with her. She wasn't hurting, but she just had to get her mind together. Well, look at her rebounding numbers. And, you know, in their last few games, she's actually been better than she was before surgery.
Well, I'll tell you, I did pick Kentucky at the start of the season to be a top-five team. So it wouldn't be terribly surprised if they made a run and did some damage here. But, you know, they got to show a little consistency, that's for sure. And, you know, it'll be nice to see and fun to see if they can. That Kentucky-Baylor rematch potentially could be a lot of fun. Let's see if we can go for five
overtime this time. Hey, Dave, you know, we didn't really touch on it at all, but, I mean, I think the biggest thing for Notre Dame, I mean, they're obviously the favorite and such, is not that they're playing at home, but I think it's the fact that UConn is also undefeated, taking a lot of the pressure off them. And the reason behind that, in my mind, is if you hear Muffet saying, and she talked the other night when she was on ESPN and said afterwards, kind of like there's the chip they have on their shoulder that no one's talking about them, no one's giving them respect. Everyone says UConn's going to win this already. And I think that helps them that, sure, I mean, playing home, they're undefeated. Obviously, they haven't lost too many in South Bend in the last few years. But not having that pressure being the only undefeated team, I think is going to help them that everyone's expecting UConn to be the team to win it all, whereas Notre Dame can sort of muffle and rally the troops, get them together. The senior leadership they have in McBride has been phenomenal this year. Ochono's been great for them as well. That they could sort of be, hey, no one's talking about us. We're 32-0, and no one's really saying that we have a chance to do anything this year.
And Doug's also, another thing that I would add to Doug's point, the Notre Dame really made the ACC look worse than it was. I mean, there was really good teams in the ACC, and the fact that they were able to go into that league and go undefeated in that league was very impressive, especially those road games that they'd never had before. And Muffet McGraw even said, hey, there's always those gyms you don't play well in, and they knew where the, you know, those gyms were in the Big East, and they had to learn about themselves on the road. They had sort of a scary game at Virginia that ended up being one of their scary road games, and they still won that. So I feel like Notre Dame is really battle tested in a way that I think is going to help them as well.
Yeah, Michelle, you make a very good point, and there was an article written, I guess, by Skylar Diggins on USA Today, and she spoke to that very point that I thought was outstanding. I mean, they had to scout a lot of new teams this year. You know, like, you kind of know what Harry Perretta is going to do. You get used to the different systems and who you're going to face and what they like to run and who their players are. Well, this staff had to come in and just get very familiar with a lot of very good teams in a short amount of time, and to dominate the way that they did, I think says a lot about Muffet's staff and their ability to prepare their teams for those games.
Brenda, would you like to add something?
No, I think well said, and I would agree. I mean, how often can you be undefeated and not have all the focus on you? So, you know, the fact that they have that opportunity to have that little bit of a chip on their shoulder and how well they have played all year long. And I think everybody's covered it really well.
We'll revisit Notre Dame for a few, you know, in a little bit on their individual players and such when we talk about the Final Four in a couple seconds. But let's hit the Louisville-Kentucky region. And Tennessee, everybody thought that they weren't going to be a number one all season as they just sat there in South Carolina led and so on. And then tournament time comes, they turn it on, they're the number one seed, West Virginia number two. Louisville, you know, a lot of people surprised, ends up the number three seed in their home region. You know, Doug, you know, we'll start with you. You were up there and saw Louisville, you know, in the American Conference with me. You're in the right place. Number two, what should Louisville have been seeded, in your opinion?
You know, it's tough. They had no real quality wins, and that's what hurt them, I think, and got them dropped down to the three seed. They obviously didn't have any bad losses like a lot of the other teams that were maybe seed ahead of them. You could say that Baylor lost the game they shouldn't have, and Stanford lost the game they shouldn't have, or two games. But Jeff's team never lost a game this year that you'd say, wow, you know, that's a bad loss for them. So I think the three seed's probably not the end of the world for them. The same way I thought that Notre Dame's probably not – didn't need to play at home to advance to the Final Four. Having Louisville play at home in that region with, I think, four really, really good teams – is going to be a huge, huge advantage for them. I mean, if they get to play West Virginia in the regional semis and play at home, we've all seen how that place can get loud. I think that's going to be enough to get them through. And if they play Tennessee or Maryland in the regional final to get to the Final Four, I mean, they have experience. They have everything they need. They have a flashy player in Shoni Schimmel. I think if being the three seed, Jeff Wall is a master motivator. I'm sure his team will have it in their mind that, you know what, this team seed in front of us is West Virginia. That's not right. We're better than them. And sure enough, they're going to play them probably. And same thing, Tennessee, and the pressure will be on them to get to the Final Four for the first time in however long, 6 years it is, or wherever the number is, that Louisville, Jeff again will say, we don't have the pressure on us to win this game. They do. And I could beat them last year. I think they can do it again. So I think it all worked out well for Louisville being that three seed, to have the motivation of that we should be better than we were. The NCAA committee didn't do us any favors. And playing at home. So I really like Louisville's chances to get out of that region.
You know, Brenda, one thing that I admit to not having seen that much of Iowa this year, but what I have seen, I've seen them on their good days. Iowa Marist is an interesting first round game. Marist is not as good as they have been in some other years. So let's get to Iowa Louisville in Sioux City. Is that a game where Iowa could take out Louisville?
I think it will be very difficult, but Iowa is a team that can put up a lot of points, and that's when they're in the nest. When they are not a great defensive team, and so it could be, you know, a potentially very high-scoring game, but Iowa has the ability. I talked about Iowa State earlier, but Iowa at home has a lot of good three-point shooters. They've got a nice presence in Bethany Doolittle inside. You got one of the best point guards around in Samantha Logic, who is a triple-double waiting to happen, a point guard that often gets double figures in rebounding as well as what she does in points and assists. So they're a very good team, and they're a good team at home. I don't think they can pull off the upset against Louisville, but I think that Louisville's going to have, you know, one of their games when they're able to put up a lot of points, which they're very capable of doing. But that's Iowa's strength in that potential matchup.
And David, I do have to, for the Midwesterners, it is Iowa City. Sioux City is on the western side of the state, across the river from Omaha. And I know you know that as an East Coast person, but I'm sure all the Midwesterners are like, hey, Iowa City, Sioux City, nowhere near each other. City is also one of the coldest places on earth every time I've been there. So I'm looking forward to it. Even it being springtime, it will be incredibly cold in Iowa City. So I'm sorry.
Well, and Michelle, he may have brought that up because I sent him an email earlier. I was in Sioux City last night for the NAIA Division II championship, so I was in Sioux City, Iowa, and now going to Iowa City this weekend for the first and second rounds. But, yeah, Michelle, the last time I was in Iowa City, it was 15 below zero when I walked out of my hotel.
Thanks for trying to cover for me, Brenda, but the truth of the matter is that this old guy is getting used to the new glasses and misread it.
No problem.
So let's talk West Virginia. Let's talk Georgia Tech. Let's talk all of them going down to play at LSU, where last year they surprised a few people. I love Mike Carey teams. I've always been a West Virginia guy, love the way he coaches, and he's got offense this year in Bria Holmes. Uh-huh. So, Michelle, West Virginia, would it surprise you to see them go far, but also would it surprise you to see them get knocked out fairly early?
I would say it would surprise me a little bit to see them get knocked out early, and it wouldn't surprise me to see them make the regional final. I think that's a possibility. Let me say one thing real quick about Louisville. I never understand when people get super upset about a three seed as opposed to a two. Especially in the women's game, it's the same thing. If seeds hold, you're going to be playing the two. If seeds hold, you're going to be playing the three if you're the two. And you start off, you're playing, you know, a 14 or a 15. Again, in women's basketball, it's pretty much the same thing. So if I thought I deserved a two and I got a three, I wouldn't worry about it. If I thought I deserved a three and I got a four, then I'd be upset because that means you're going to have to probably face the one in the regional semifinals, which is, I think, the position Nebraska's in. I think they probably deserved a three, and they've got a four. They could maybe be playing UConn in a regional final. Anyway, so I do want to say that about Louisville. I wouldn't worry about having a three seed if I were them. In terms of West Virginia, their fans, I think, are the most ticked off fans in women's basketball. They are convinced the whole world is against them. They're the ones I hear from the most. You ESPN people and national people, you guys don't have any respect for West Virginia. So they're really ready to make a big run and show everybody, hey, we're really a good team. Crystal Caldwell, great player, and I think has been a huge factor for them in terms of the being a chemistry and a glue player for them. And then Asia Bussey, who Mike Carey says is the absolute anchor of his defense. And she may not be a super athletic mobile player, but she's big, she's strong, and she really understands what she has to do for West Virginia's defense. And as you said, this is a better offensive team, West Virginia, than we're used to seeing.
Yeah, I
think if I could just add to that, just having seen West Virginia a lot of times this year, it's their best offensive team in Mike Carey's tenure at West Virginia. And they've got depth. They've got so many different guards and posts that they can bring off the bench so they can play that physical style of defense that they've been known for over the years, because if they foul, they've got more to bring in. And they've got Taylor Palmer off the bench, a three-point shooter. Bria Holmes, as you talked about early, is a sophomore and a really athletic face-up player that can take out the dribble, hit the three, do a lot of things. So they have a lot of weapons. And with Bussey on the inside, both offensively and defensively, they really have that inside presence. And aside from the Big 12 tournament final, they've come back over and over this year in conference play. I think it was six games that they were down in the last 8 minutes, and they came back to win the game. So they don't get rattled toward the end of the game, typically. So, they're tournament ready. And, going and playing at LSU, if that happens in the second round, tough environment, but West Virginia is very used to going on the road and being successful in tough road environments.
Now, LaChina, I think that Georgia Tech is going to knock off LSU in the first round, even at LSU. Kayla Davis is a lot of fun. Ty Marshall is a serious talent. What do you think?
I'm right there with you, David. I think that Georgia Tech is going to knock off LSU. I've had the chance to cover both teams, and I just think Georgia Tech's strength is their physicality. They're a very, very physical team, and I think LSU, in particular, Teresa Plaisant, sometimes shies away from that type of game. I think they are very talented, and Nikki Caldwell does a very good job. You know, they've got outstanding freshmen, Regine Moncrief. You can go on and on. I just don't think that they have the consistency. And I would take that back to Danielle Ballard and just how, you know, she's had to miss some games because of suspension and different things. She's one of the best guards in the country. I mean, I'm convinced of that. I got to spend some time with them last year in Spokane for the regional, but she has not been consistent enough. And I think Teresa Plaisance, as talented as she is, certain matchups give her trouble. Watched her against South Carolina, their size inside, their physicality, it really troubled her. So I think Georgia Tech got the upper hand. Ty Marshall's having an outstanding season. You know, now the career leader in points at Georgia Tech. I agree with you about Caleb Davis. And it will be very interesting if Georgia Tech does beat LSU and then, you know, they go on to play West Virginia, because I think both teams mirror each other, at least in what they try to do defensively. The downside for Georgia Tech is they don't have the interior experience. I mean, I watched the Maryland Terrapins just tear Georgia Tech apart on the inside. So their guard play defensively has to be playing very well, because they really don't have any answer for Asia Bussey on the inside. But also keep in mind that Michelle Joseph hired old West Virginia assistant coach ML Willis, which would be interesting because she was with Mike Carey alongside of him for many years. And if anyone knows not only those kids but his system, it would be Malika.
Now, Doug, they took one of my favorite stories in the tournament that I've raved about all year, Kelsey Minato, and they took Army and they sent her to Maryland to play the Terps. Now, you saw Army this week. Does Army have any kind of a chance to become that 13 seed that can knock off a 4 seed?
If they were playing up in West Point and all the cadets were there, I'd say they'd have a fighting chance to do it. But down in College Park, I'd say they're going to be really hard-pressed. I mean, look, it's a great story. The fact that Army made it back to the tournament for the first time since 2006, the year that Maggie Dixon tragically passed away, it's wonderful to see them back in the tournament. Kelsey Minato is a tremendous guard who may not look like much. If you see her on the street, you'd be like, this girl plays Division I basketball. She's 5'4", 5'5". She loves doing the little floater shot, but she put up 49 points against Holy Cross earlier in the season. I mean, she can put points on the board. She's automatic from the free throw line. I think she was 26 for 26 that game, set an NCAA record. Like, she's a fun player to watch. I just don't think that Army has enough to keep the game competitive besides her. And Alyssa Thomas, I mean, talk about a senior, has had a heck of a career. She has been phenomenal. She's carried Maryland the last couple of years. I just don't see anyone in Army who can stop her. I mean, she could put up probably 30 points, 15 rebounds, and 15 assists against the Black Knights if she's in the game that long.
You know, I think that Maryland should consider going to the Patriot League if UConn has to stay in the American. So, Alyssa Thomas, Regina, is one of your faves. So tell me why Maryland with Alyssa Thomas is going to make a deep run in the tournament, if they are.
Well, I think they've got favorable matchups, you know, and Brenda may be able to speak a little bit more to Texas, but I just think that Maryland is the kind of team which we've seen in the NCAA tournament, that if Texas advances, of course, but in the NCAA tournament that Brenda can get them going. You know, I mean, they won the championship in 2006 with freshmen and sophomores. Well, once again, she finds herself really relying on some younger players, whether it's Brianna Jones on the interior or Lexi Brown at the point, Shatori Walker-Kimbrough. But Brenda Freeze, I think, is one of the best motivators, especially for young kids and getting them to believe. And then you add to that Alyssa Thomas. If they can get quality play out of Alicia Devon, I really think that's going to be the key. You know, she has all of the experience in the world. But if she's never really materialized into the double-double machine that I thought she could be. Her offensive development from a half-court standpoint is not as good as I think it will be through the future of her career. But, you know, Alyssa Thomas I just don't know what to do to stop her. You know, she has single-handedly, you look at Maryland's record while she's been there, she's won a lot of those games on her very own. I mean, she's definitely one of the best players that we've had a chance to watch. But, you know, do they have a chance to make it to the regional semifinals? Sure. Will they make it past Tennessee? I don't think they have the interior experience to do that.
Hey, LaChina, I have a question for you real quick before I talk about Texas. I have a feeling that's coming up. How good is Maryland's defense this year?
I don't think Maryland's defense has ever been particularly good, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are a team that thrives off of scoring points in the paint. their transition game and your inability to stop it. I talked to Susie Merchant, and she played Maryland last year in the NCAA tournament. She said, I absolutely stole their transition offense because I can't beat it. Anything I can't beat, I want to steal it. So it's very hard to stop them there. And then they're great on the board. So if rebounding counts as defense, then so be it. But I wouldn't say that they are just an outstanding half-court team. I mean, we watch UVA light them up from outside in ACC play, which started a skid of them losing. You know, they've had to move Alyssa Thomas around for various reasons. I think defense has been one of them. Katie Rutan, I love her to death, and she's a tough defender, but I think she's been challenged at times on the defensive end. So if Maryland does have a weakness, I would say half court defensively would be it, Brenda.
Well, and that's what I wanted to get to that, because I think that with Texas, I think that this might be a year where they can make a break back onto the national scene, become nationally relevant once again, because I think Texas is going to be the preseason favorite next year to win the Big 12, and I think they have an opportunity to springboard in this tournament, but the teams they've struggled the most against, and Maryland's never, and Brenda Freeze's teams have never been known for their defense, and that's why I wanted to ask you if there's much of a change that you've seen in that way in this year, and I didn't think that was the case, but I think the only teams Texas has really struggled against this year are the really physical lockdown defensive teams, including Baylor and West Virginia. But they have depth, Texas. They have shooters. They have guards that can create. They have size. One of the biggest teams in the Big 12, Monty McGee Stafford, has been up and down this year, but has the potential to put a lot of points on the board. And Paulie, one of the most athletic power forwards in the game. Then they bring Kelsey Lang at 6'5 off the bench. Texas has a lot going for it. And they played West Virginia within a possession in the Big 12 semifinal. And I just think Karen Aspen has that program headed in the right direction. They've got a couple of kids coming in next year that are real difference makers. And so, this just might be one of those opportunities that you see a team that is moving in the right direction, getting back to national relevance. They could help themselves out by a huge win in a second round matchup against a team like Maryland to advance to the regional semifinals and then get a chance at Tennessee. I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen or not. Alyssa Thomas is amazing, and, you know, whether or not she can carry them in that situation, she probably – I mean, I know she can. I know she has the capability, but whether she will, Texas is a very good team defensive they have very good team defense, and they're a good rebounding team, and so that matches up well with Maryland. So I'm just – that's another one that I have circled on my bracket just because – Texas is a very dangerous team.
Now, I would second a lot what Brenda says, because in part of everything she said, and just to add a little to that, that Texas has the personnel, I think, to match up with Alyssa Thomas. I'm not saying any of them are as good as she is, but they have so much depth, they are so athletic, and they're so big that I think they can do things to frustrate Alyssa Thomas. And if there is any weakness in her game, it's if you force her to try to beat you completely from the outside and you really kind of take away some of her pass to the basket and some of, you know, the things that she can do to hurt you a little, you know, a little closer in. And I think if Texas, again, with those kids, to me, I think, and Brenda has seen them a lot, if they're plugged in, they're a very dangerous team. They've had some games where I think they've been a little scatterbrained, and that's been a Texas problem, you know, for a while now. But when they are plugged in, they do have the personnel, you know, I think, to make it to the Sweet 16.
You know, one of the things that I've seen about Maryland, one of the keys to beating them is to, even if you don't get the offensive rebound, you got to keep the ball inside and not give long rebounds, because the thing is, Alyssa Thomas is a fast break in waiting. She gets the rebound, she does an outlet, she just takes off. So they get so many points off of the transition, like LaChina said, with Thomas just leading it herself. So if Texas uses their size to the advantage that they have, and keeps the ball inside, I think that's going to help them, and we definitely have the possibility of an upset there. You know, but what I was starting to say before is this, you know, you mentioned Texas, and I mentioned, you know, Army. There are some great stories in this region, and Cynthia Cooper-Dyke is definitely one of the more intriguing ones, as she goes back home, flashes the championship rings, and next thing you know, they're knocking off Stanford in the Pac-12 tournament after knocking off Arizona State and off Oregon. So here we sit with USC coming and playing St. John's in their first-round game. Now, Doug, can USC continue to surprise people and move on?
Yeah, I think so. I think the St. John's team is not as good as the past few have been. I mean, they lost to a good DePaul team in the finals of the Big East tournament. And I just think that USC has confidence right now. I mean, they went through the Pac-12 tournament. They I think won the 4 games in 4 days or whatever it was. They're beating a really good Stanford team, and then they were down to Oregon State and showed some guts to come back and win that game. So despite being tired, they came through, and Cynthia Cooper has really, I think, already established a culture, a winning culture that USC has been missing for the last couple of years. So, yeah, I think they have a really good chance to win a game there, and then we'll see what happens after that. But getting that one win, I think, would be huge for that program. Sort of what we're talking about with Texas, getting that win for USC would be great for the next few years and knowing that, hey, we can compete at this level, we can beat teams. So, yeah, I think they got a win in them.
You know, much like the past successes of Texas, you look at the past successes of SC, you know, they've got some great people coming in. They do have, you know, unfortunately, Cassie Harberts will be leaving, but they do have some players that can certainly play and continue to build a program there. Now, Michelle, I think that USC starting to come back and becoming a real potential opponent for Stanford is huge for West Coast basketball.
Oh, it absolutely is. And it was a big deal last year for Cal to make it to a Final Four, since Stanford had been carrying that torch, you know, for years and years and years and years. Stanford's still the last Pac-12 team, you know, to have won a national championship, last West Coast team, you know, back in, and that's 92. So really, golly, that's most of the people who are playing women's college basketball now weren't even born in the last time a West Coast team won a national championship. Cynthia Cooper won two herself when she was playing at SC, and this is her alma mater. We've all talked a lot about how important it is for the continued growth and development of women's college basketball for the Pac-12 to be better. And a lot of times they'll talk about, hey, we're getting better, and, you know, maybe in their own microcosm they're getting better, but they hadn't really made, I thought, a whole lot of headway nationally. I think, Cal's appearance in the Final Four last year and seeing, you know, for the first time Stanford not making a Pac-12 tournament championship game, those are good signs for the Pac-12 and then by extension for women's basketball overall.
We could have a whole conversation about the Pac-12 and what's going on there, but, you know, that's for another day, I think. But so let's talk Tennessee Lady Vols. Their home state hosting the Final Four, you know, that Stanford team, just to throw out a little tidbit for you, in 92, is the only team in the history of the NCAA women's basketball tournament to win a championship in their own state. So I don't know if that means anything, but it's something that it will be interesting to keep an eye on. So LaChina, Tennessee, you know, Louisville, West Virginia, Tennessee going to be able to survive this bracket?
Well, I think it's going to be tough. I think they'll definitely be challenged, but they've shown, I think, in the past few weeks that they can rise to the occasion. I definitely see them getting to the regional finals. I think, obviously, beating Louisville at Louisville is going to be difficult. And going back to Michelle's point about the 2 and 3 seeds with Jeff Walls, I'm sure that everyone else was even more disappointed when they found out they were going to have to go through his home court to get to the Final Four than he was to find out whether he, you know, where his seed was. But, no, I think Tennessee has what it takes, you know, and I think to their benefit, they're peaking at the right time. playing with a lot of confidence. I think their interior game is really starting to emerge behind Izzy Harrison. I think Drea Carter's name has to come up. I mean, she has stepped in a major, major role with Massengill going out to be the starting point guard for this team, and they played some of their best basketball. You know, I think as we heard everyone say, even during the selection show coverage, Megan Simmons and how she plays and her decision making will be key. I think it will always be. But, you know, I think if there is a disadvantage for Tennessee in this region is that they have to play on Louisville's home court.
You know, and I talk heavily about age and how important it is and that you have to have strong guard play. And, you know, LaChina's right in that Carter has really stepped up her game, and Simmons has been playing with more consistency. But, you know, Tennessee's strength is that front line. And do they have some hard play to be able to make it all the way into a deep run into headed towards the Final Four?
I think that's the question mark. I think, you know, you have to have the strong guard play to be able to advance this time of year. They've gotten the play that from Simmons and Carter that LaChina was talking about, but, you know, who can hang with Graves on the inside and Izzy Harrison the way they dominate on the inside? And I think with Tennessee, with the possibility of getting back to Nashville and just rekindling so much of their, you know, the enthusiasm with their program and returning to a Final Four and all of those things is going to be so important. It's such a carrot out there, but with all the storylines within that entire bracket, it is going to be really interesting to see who ends up coming out.
We have to say goodbye to Brenda as we try and put – we've run a little over, and I want to just try and put a wrap on things. So, Brenda, do you want to give us any parting thoughts on the tournament, any players to watch, any games to watch, Final Four thoughts? I'll let you leave your own parting thoughts. And thank you again for spending so much time with us.
Absolutely. I appreciate so much being part of this and just being able to share and listen to the others on this call with the perspectives from all over the country. It's interesting just to see how everybody you know, perceives the matchups and everything going into it. I think there are going to be some really compelling stories. I've already, you know, talked about some of those potential matchups throughout, but, you know, some of the things that stand out to me in the bracket, potentially South Carolina and North Carolina matching up in the regional semifinals with all that Dawn Staley is doing with that program at South Carolina. I talked earlier about Oklahoma and Duke, and Michelle rightly brought up, you know, don't forget about DePaul. DePaul's had a fantastic season. I have so much respect for what Doug Bruno does, and, you know, so just even that initial matchup, I think, between DePaul and Oklahoma, and I know LaChina's going to be there, that could be pretty fascinating. But the potential Kentucky-Baylor rematch and West Virginia and Louisville playing one another in the regional semifinals possibly, and then can Tennessee make it back to the Final Four when it's in their home state? Will all the number one seeds advance? And, you know, will South Carolina make it to their first Final Four? And ultimately, will it all fade away and it's going to come down to UConn, Notre Dame like everybody expects it to? With all the great storylines leading up to it, ultimately, that's probably where it's going to end up, and I can't wait for that possible matchup. If that happens, probably will happen, but everything else sure makes for good stories along the way.
Brenda, and we will see you at Iowa City this weekend. So have a great coverage, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks so much.
Guys, let's hit the Final Four real quick so we can call this a call. All right. We did not spend any time talking about Connecticut because I was waiting until we got here to talk. C. Vivian Stringer made the comment that this was the best Connecticut team that she'd ever seen because of their height. And, you know, when I watch that team and I see them go with that big lineup, when they put Stokes and Stewart and Dolson on the court and they go into a zone and each of them spreads their arms finger to finger, it is a sight that
the other team's got to be looking at and saying, holy crap. So, Doug, where does this UConn team fit into our recent history, and what are your thoughts on their ability to repeat and win this championship this year?
Well, I think it's too early to tell. You can't judge them against the UConn teams of the past that were so great. I mean, that one that had Montgomery, Charles, and Moore was phenomenal. The one back in the early 2000s that had the unbelievable team that was probably the best women's basketball team of all time, arguably. So it's too early to tell. But this team is special. I mean, they've run through everybody they've played. They've got probably the best player in the country in Breonna Stewart. They have a really good 2-3-4 behind her and Hartley, Dolson, Mosquita Lewis now that she's healthy. Mariah Jefferson's raised her game this level. She's probably the most improved player in the country on the best team in the country. So the only thing that could cause them problems, I think, and you obviously can't control that, would be injury. And they've made it through the season having some injuries, but they've survived. They have seven players for the most part, and they don't foul. It's not like they're not calling fouls against them. They just don't foul. They don't commit fouls. They work around in practice. They play unbelievable defense. I mean, it's theirs to lose. I can't see anybody except for Notre Dame potentially beating them just because Notre Dame has the history. There isn't that fear factor that's so big against playing UConn. They beat them 7 of the last 9 times. So they do play for the first time this season in the Battle of the Unbeatens for the national championship. There isn't that, oh, my God, we're playing UConn. We can't do this because Notre Dame's not afraid of them, and Muffet's not afraid of Geno. But this team is just, I mean, I've seen them play enough on the road in big games that they're just not going to lose. I mean, I think he's 8-0 in national championship games, Geno is, and I can't see him not being 9-0 setting the record.
Michelle, why don't you give us, let's talk briefly about the Final Four. Give me your thoughts, and we'll use this, guys, to wrap this up. Why don't you give us your final thoughts on where we stand, because it is early. We have time in a couple weeks to even discuss this if we want to do again. So, Michelle, why don't you go first, because I know you've got time.
Well, you know, if let's say all four number ones, you know, do make it into which doesn't happen that often. I mean, that's a thing. It doesn't necessarily the ones and the twos and threes usually make it, but it's actually pretty rare that all four number ones make it. But let's say they do. What is interesting is I really feel like South Carolina is kind of a year away from being a potentially great team. They're all so young. It's a sophomore and junior led team and freshman with Elena Coates. So I think if they're able to make a Final Four, this is going to be, if it was UConn and South Carolina, it's the extremes of the program that has won 8 and has been there so often, and everybody on that team is Final Four experienced versus a program that's never been there, but has a coach who's been there. So I think that would be two real extremes, and what's also then an interesting subplot is those are the two teams that apparently are, you know, right in the thick of the race for the top freshman in the country in Asia Wilson, who is from Columbia, South Carolina. So that's a subplot to that. On the other side of the bracket, if it's the two number ones, the first 20 times Notre Dame and Tennessee played each other, Tennessee won, which included way back in the Final Four in 1997. And Notre Dame's turned that around since their first victory against Tennessee, which was in the 2011 Elite Eight when they made the Final Four again. So what Doug said about Notre Dame not being intimidated, I think that's a big thing, because they really have become that team. Their seniors don't know anything different than going to a Final Four. They've been to 3 of them. They expect to go to Final Fours now, which is something that previously you only had programs like UConn and Tennessee that actually would expect that. So Notre Dame's just a very different team than even, you know, 3 or 4 years ago in terms of what their program expectations are. And then it's really hard to see it not being Notre Dame and UConn, and I do think Notre Dame has the, you know, can beat UConn in part because they believe it, and in part because they have such a tremendous backcourt. as far as, you know, see Vivian Stringer saying it's the best UConn team that she's seen, I think that's a little bit like saying this is the most beautiful sunset I've seen over the Grand Canyon. You know, it's they have so many great teams. I mean, we really can't forget back that 95 team that with Rebecca Lobo and Jen Rosati that went undefeated. I personally think their 2002 team, you know, with Cash and Bird and Tamika Williams and Diana Taurasi, I still think that is the best team probably of all time that we've seen in women's college basketball. But this year's team certainly has a chance to be pretty special too, and a lot of it I think is going to come down to I don't see them getting in foul trouble. As Doug said, you would think foul trouble could be a problem for them if they got into foul trouble, but they don't. So it really may come down to almost like who can execute the other team if it's Notre Dame and UConn. And this is one of those times when you think these are the two best executing teams in the country. It could be quite a treat.
You know, just to mention what you said, twice all four number one seeds have made it to the Final Four. 1989 and then 2012 are the only times. And actually only 10 times have there been two number one seeds. Out
of
the 32
seeds,
there's been a third.
We've never had two undefeateds, you know, meet in a championship game. So, you know, that would be historic in a lot of ways. The one other history thing, David, I just wanted to mention real quick is, you talked about teams not winning in their home states. There's a long history of that. It's kind of fascinating how teams would just miss, you know, that they would not necessarily play that great the year the Final Four was in their home state and then win after that or before that. But what's fascinating from a history standpoint to me is that you look at the only other year the Final Four was in Tennessee, 1990 in Knoxville, and it was Dawn Staley's sophomore year at Virginia. And she was able to lead Virginia over Tennessee in the regional final in Norfolk. And Pat Summitt always said that was the most painful loss in her career because then she had to go back and put on a happy face for a Final Four in her building that she wasn't playing in. And by the same token, the last game Dawn Staley played in college was a loss at the hands of Tara Vanderveer in Stanford. And who knows, that may be Dawn going against Tara for a berth in this year's Final Four. I just love those historical connections. Maybe it's just because I'm old and I can remember this stuff, but I love the fact that, you know, we can look back and see these connectors between generations.
Michelle, thanks for your time today, and we appreciate it. Enjoy the tournament.
Thank you.
Lachina, we'll get you off the hook. Lachina, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Give me your parting thoughts on the Final Four and the rest of the tournament.
Well, I think it's going to be a fun one. Like everyone said, I think I'm really excited to see what happens with Notre Dame and UConn in their pursuit of perfection. When you look at it, I believe that, you know, Louisville is in a favorable position because of the regional final. You know, I just believe that. I think they have an awesome environment there at the Yum. And they may have been under some pressure because they do have the regional final at home, but I think Jeff Walz is going to spin that around now and say, well, we weren't picked as high as we should have, so they'll play with a chip on their shoulder. And they played with a chip last year, and we saw what happened there. As far as Notre Dame, you know, I just think they will advance to the Final Four as well. Again, they obviously have a favorable situation in terms of site, but I just think that they have been so good, and Jewel Lloyd and Kayla McBride are two outstanding players who just have a competitiveness that is rare. I think Muffet is one of the most competitive people I've ever been around, and so they just expect to win, and there's something special about a team that expects to win. As far as the Stanford South Carolina situation, if it ends up being that, you know, Stanford has had some time to reflect on the fact that they weren't the Pac-12 tourney champions. I think they had some disappointing stretches towards the end of the season, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back from that. I don't think they're as talented 1 through 7 as South Carolina. But obviously, Chinee is an amazing player and athlete, and I think she has been probably the most impressive player that I've watched or games that I've covered this year in her ability to score over triple teams, double teams, and tall defenders. The one thing that I think works to South Carolina's advantage is that they have played and won in some hostile environments. I think being out in the West Coast sometimes can be almost like being in your own world, and that can be a benefit in keeping your student-athletes away from distractions and such. So as much as we've talked about the advantage of the regional finals on campus, I do think that South Carolina has a chance to kind of get away and away from the pressure and see what they can really do. And hopefully they can capitalize on some disappointing moments towards the end of the season. But then there's Connecticut. And I just, and David, you touched upon this, their interior when they go big is something that no one can really counter. You know, I think if they can get quality play out of Stokes, if we can see Kalina Mosqueda-Lewis get into a comfort zone, I don't think there's any chance of anyone else beating them. I really don't. I think that Gino's just done a fantastic job with player development. I mean, Mariah Jefferson and her ability to hit the three, her overall confidence, Brianna Stewart, you know, plays at a high level, especially when she knows that there's something on a line. I don't know what you do with Stephanie Dolson and the link that they have in that 2-3 zone. So I think you're absolutely right there. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I do think that Notre Dame and UConn will meet in the national championship game, and it's all about who's ready and who has all the pieces clicking at the same time. But if those two factors for Connecticut are working with Stokes and Kalina Mosqueda-Lewis getting back to form, Huskies are going to be really hard to beat.
Sounds good. LaChyna, thank you very much for your time, and we appreciate all of your insights. And thanks again for a great season calling games for all of us.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for all of your work, David and Michelle and Doug and Brenda and everything you guys do. It's really just fun to be able to sit down and talk. We kind of travel in our own pockets all season long. It's good to come together at the end and really look at not only the great work that's been done, the great basketball we've watched, but also all the fun that's ahead.
Good stuff.
Doug. You still awake, Doug?
I am. I'm still here. Great points by LaChyna and Brenda and Michelle.
All right, Doug, I've got one question for you to consider as you make your final points, and I'd like your thoughts on this. As somebody that sees firsthand more than the other people we've had on what it's like in Connecticut, Notre Dame, UConn, two undefeated teams potentially, great game. UConn, Tennessee, if they take out Notre Dame, both with 8 championships in Tennessee, chance to win the championship. Why isn't there more buzz about that game than we're hearing, or not hearing, as the case may be?
Well, I think it's twofold. I think a big part of it is probably just because UConn and Notre Dame being undefeated is something we've never seen before. We've seen UConn play Tennessee in the finals. We've seen them play in the regular season, although it's been a few years now, obviously. But we've never seen two undefeated teams play in the NCAA tournament for a national championship. And you haven't seen that on the men's side. You haven't seen it on the women's side. So that's got the historic feel to it. Also, there's the natural rivalry between the two schools. I mean, Notre Dame and UConn have played 12 times the last 3 years. Before this year, there's a history between them, a recent history that people seem to have gravitated to. They've met in the Final Four the last couple of years, and they've each won some of those games. So it's the of-the-moment feel between them. And as sad as it is, I think some of the Tennessee luster is gone because Pat Summers is no longer coaching there. There was such a rivalry between UConn and Tennessee in its heyday because it was Pat versus Gino, and it helped grow women's basketball. And it's no disrespect to Holly, but that just isn't there anymore. There isn't that if they do play again, or should say when they do play again, it'll be big, but not what it used to be. And I think that's kind of why Notre Dame has sort of supplanted Tennessee in Connecticut as far as, like, the rivalry goes. So it would be a really great game if you had UConn playing Tennessee for the national championship with the winner getting a record ninth title. That would be something special. But UConn-Notre Dame is something historic if they play in the national championship game, being two undefeated teams.
Great answer. So now tell me what your parting thoughts are on this year's tournament.
I just think it's been a great year. I mean, it's funny. There's the top two teams that are undefeated really haven't had many great games. I mean, they've been on the collision course all season long, and if you look at the scores, there haven't been that many thrillers where they've been in close games. I mean, there's the UConn-Baylor game was pretty good, and the Maryland versus Notre Dame game was pretty good, and the Duke-Notre Dame game for a half was pretty good in the ACC tournament final. But those two teams haven't been challenged. And a lot of the other teams out there, I mean, heck, you take those two teams out of the bracket, that'd be a heck of a tournament. You'd have some really, really good matchups, and you wouldn't know who's going to be in the finals. You wouldn't know who's going to win it, which is always a fun thing, which it seems like the men have now on their bracket. But I really think it's been a great year. There's been great stories, great players. It's always nice this time of year. You see the seniors playing their sort of the last hurrah. How far can they carry their teams, which is always special. I just think it's been exciting for women's basketball. And I think if we get the game that everyone's expecting, everyone wants, it could sort of be one of those games that transcends the sport and gets people outside of the women's basketball realm talking about it. Because it has happened so rarely in any sport that you have the best playing each other, and in this case, two undefeated teams. So that's what I'm excited to see and excited to potentially have happen, is something that is monumental in sports, having two undefeated teams play each other for the national championship on the grandest stage.
Well, Doug, I think you're right. It's been a lot of fun all season, and there's nothing better than tournament time. You know, when the stakes get so high and the abilities to rise to the occasion or display from so many talented players. So, Doug, you know, thanks again for joining us, and I look forward to leading your continued coverage of women's basketball for the AP.
Thanks, David.
And for everybody that's listened, I hope you've enjoyed our take on the NCAA tournament. I hope you've submitted your brackets, and I hope that all of your favorites are successful. Yeah, I'm sorry, there isn't, you know, Doug, are you putting up $1 billion for the women's tournament for a perfect
I think ESPN's got a better shot of being able to fund that than I would.
Okay, we'll have to go back and we'll ask them to see if they can do it for next season. Thanks again, everybody, and good night.